You are Locked On Dodgers, your daily Los Angeles Dodgers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So I say D, I say D-O, D-O-D, D-O-D-G, D-O-D-G-E-R-S, team, 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 all.
Hello, Dodger fans. Welcome to Locked On Dodgers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one local sports daily podcast network. Locked On, your team every day. This is the daily podcast covering the Los Angeles Dodgers, bringing you the smart fans' perspective on our boys in blue. I am Jeff Snyder of Baseball Essential, and I am flying solo today. We told you earlier this week that there would be a solo episode. Vince has some stuff going on, and I kind of had a solo episode in the tank anyway. We've had, after our discussion a week or two ago about the four Dodgers going to arbitration hearings, we mentioned at the end that we didn't want to weigh you guys down with stuff you already knew, but that if anybody had any specific questions or wanted more information, to let us know, and several of you did. And so this episode is going to be kind of a primer on the salary arbitration process, how it works, what it means, etc. So if you already know all this stuff, go ahead and listen anyway. But, you know, it'll be focused more. There'll be some minutia. And so don't get mad at me if I say something you already know, because not everybody is as smart as you. So that's the plan for today. But first, I want to remind you, please subscribe to Locked On Dodgers wherever you get your podcasts. And when you get in your car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. All right. So talking about arbitration, I'm using several sources for this. Some of it is just, I've been a baseball fan for, 36 years or so, I guess. And I, this kind of stuff actually really interests me. And so I've always kind of taken an interest and read a lot about boring stuff like salary arbitration. I don't know why it has always fascinated me, but it has. So I've got a lot of built-in knowledge, I guess. I have the collective bargaining agreement in front of me, which lays out the process for arbitration. So I will be referring to that quite a bit and just kind of going to lay it out, try to lay it out in layman's terms so you can all kind of understand what's going on. Little history of the Dodgers and arbitration. The Dodgers haven't gone to an arbitration hearing since Joe Beimel in whenever that was, 2007. So it's been 13 years since the Dodgers have gone to arbitration. The last one before that was Eric Gagne in 2004. So, they've only been to one in the last 16 years. And so it is kind of crazy that they have four guys who, as of right now, are scheduled to go to arbitration. The Dodgers take a policy of what they call file and trial, which basically means it's the team says, look, let's either get this worked out by the deadline to exchange numbers, or we're going to a hearing. And it's kind of a way to make sure that both sides take things seriously and not, try to use the deadlines as negotiation ploys or whatever. It's hard to say for sure how strict the Dodgers will be on that, because it's never been tested before under this administration. Under the Andrew Friedman regime, no player has ever gotten to the file and trial stage before, and now suddenly four have. And so, obviously, the team may want to stick to their guns, because we're going to say the word precedent a lot on today's episode, because so much of the salary arbitration process is precedent. And Friedman knows that if he negotiates with these four players, then any notion of file and trial is out the window, because the precedent will have been set that they are willing to negotiate after the exchange of numbers. Doesn't mean they shouldn't do it. It's just something that will weigh into their decision about whether to negotiate. One extenuating factor might be a lot of teams that claim a file and trial status. They won't negotiate a one-year deal, but they will still work on negotiating multi-year deals in some cases. And so a guy like Max Muncy, you could see the Dodgers maybe working out a two or three year or four year deal, and And that wouldn't necessarily violate their file and trial stance because it's a multi-year extension and not just 1 year. So, the Dodgers haven't lost a hearing, arbitration hearing since 2001. I'll tell you more about who that was when we get to today's obscure former Dodger. And so basically there's a few deadlines, a few dates. Earlier this offseason was the deadline for the Dodgers to tender or non-tender players. You probably hear that phrase. If you don't know what that means, it to tender a contract means to offer a contract, to say, yes, we want you. The most notable recent or one notable recent-ish example of non-tendering a guy was Russell Martin. And after the 2010 season, the Dodgers chose to non-tender Russell Martin basically because he was going to make more in arbitration than they wanted to pay based on his performance, based on their spot in the competitive cycle, all those things. The Dodgers decided that they would rather not pay Russell Martin what he was going to make in arbitration, so they non-tendered him. He went to the Yankees and then the Pirates and then the Blue Jays and then back to the Dodgers, et cetera, et cetera. All the guys who were then eligible for arbitration, it was because the Dodgers tendered them contracts. And the Dodgers this year had 9 guys, I believe. Pedro Baez, Cody Bellinger, Kike Hernandez, Max Muncy, Jock Peterson, Corey Seager, Ross Stripling, Chris Taylor, and Julio Urias. Those were the 9 guys who were arbitration eligible who the Dodgers tendered. We speculated that they might non-tender Scott Alexander. They didn't do that, but they agreed. I guess he's still pre-arbitration. But so for the arbitration guys, they tendered contracts to all those guys, and they settled with 5 of them. The 4 who they haven't settled with are Pedro Baez, Max Muncy, Jock Peterson, and Chris Taylor. And they are pretty close on most of those numbers with most of those guys, but except for Jock. Jock, they're quite a ways off. And so we'll get into that a little more in a minute about the specific players. Let me just check the clock. Yeah, let's go ahead and take a break here where we are. When we come back, I will talk about the specific players, the numbers exchanged, and then what happens next in the actual hearing, and maybe another date or two that's important to this process. But first, I want to talk to you about Arizona. It's a great place to go see spring training. The Dodgers, obviously, they do spring training there. It's a quick little drive from Southern California, 5 or 6 hours tops, really. And it's an easy drive, straight shot down the 10, takes you right into Phoenix, into Glendale, where the Dodgers are. The weather in March is beautiful in Arizona. It's the nicest, it's a beautiful place to be in March, even if you weren't there for baseball. But obviously, it's where all the baseball is happening, so it's an even better place to be. It's an easy place to get to for a quick weekend trip if you want to do that, or if you want to take more time, you can do that. Take your kids. There's a lot of fun stuff for families, different hotels and resorts you can stay at, water parks, etc. If you're into hiking, there's tons of that. If you want to take your family to see the Grand Canyon, it's just a couple hours away from the Phoenix area. It's beautiful. Everybody should see the Grand Canyon at least once in their life. It's pretty amazing. It's grand, you might say. Just a ton of stuff to do in Arizona. And a lot of baseball stuff. Even if you just want to focus on baseball, there's 15 teams there. So you can pretty much see whatever you want to see in Arizona baseball-wise in March. So if you're thinking about going, plan your spring training getaway at the website visitarizona.com/springtraining. That's visitarizona.com/springtraining. And keep it locked on Dodgers. Okay, let's quickly jump into our obscure former Dodger of the day, and then we'll get back to the arbitration talk. I mentioned earlier that the last time the Dodgers lost an arbitration hearing was 2001, and that was to a guy named Terry Adams. Terry Adams came up with the Cubs in 1995. 96, his first full season in the big leagues, he was actually really, really good for the Cubs. Pitching strictly in relief, he pitched 101 innings, which is a ton of relief innings. Had a 2.94 ERA, was really, really solid for them. And then basically never matched that. I guess he had one other year with the Dodgers actually in 2001, but that was when he was a starter, or at least a spot starter. He pitched 43 games, but 22 of those were starts. And so overall value-wise, he was more valuable, but on a per-inning basis, he was more valuable for the 96 Cubs. But he pitched for the Dodgers in 2000 and 2001 after being traded from the Cubs to the Dodgers for Ismael Valdez and Eric Young Sr., and pitched those 2 years with the Dodgers, and then the Dodgers let him go. He might have actually been a non-tender now that I'm looking at it. He became a free agent. He reached free agency, signed with the Phillies, and then signed with the Blue Jays, and then was traded to the Red Sox, and then signed back with the Phillies, and then signed with the Pirates, and never pitched for the Pirates in the big leagues, never pitched for the Red Sox either, actually. And then his career was over, but he is the last player to win an arbitration hearing against the Dodgers. In 2001, he is Terry Adams, and he's our obscure former Dodger of the day. All right, getting back to some of the dates for arbitration that are important to know. So after the non-tender deadline, then at least you know, okay, these guys are going to be on the team. It's just a question of how much they're going to get paid. And then you have the arbitration, the deadline to exchange salary dates. It is basically the second, generally the second or third Friday in January. This year it was January 10th, Friday, January 10th. And that was the day that players and teams who had not yet settled had to exchange salary figures. What that means is the player and his representatives say, I think I should make this much money, give a specific dollar amount. The team and their representatives give a number saying, we think we should pay you this much. And then it goes to arbitration. And in the arbitration hearing, there is no compromise. The arbitrators, it's a panel of three arbitrators, which we'll talk more about in a minute. They choose one or the other. So in the case of a guy like Jock Peterson, who has, there's a big gap between what he wants and what the Dodgers want to give him. The Dodgers offered $7.75 million. Jock asked for $9.5 million. That's a difference of $1.75 million. And so that's one that's going to be really interesting to see for a lot of reasons. I'll talk a little bit about the process in a minute and some of the arguments that get made. Other ones, Pedro Baez, they're only $500,000 apart. Max Muncy, they're only $675,000 apart. And Chris Taylor, they're only $550,000 apart. And so those ones are a little bit closer. But when you, so after the numbers are exchanged, now you're officially in the arbitration process. But teams can still settle with the players at any moment up until the moment that the arbitrators issue their decision. So you could even go to the hearing and you could, during a bathroom break during the hearing, you could meet in the hallway and say, okay, let's settle, and you could do it. It's never too late until the arbitrators have made their decision. The question is whether there is any negotiating still going on, and that's something that we don't really know. We don't know if the Dodgers are trying to stick to a strict file and trial policy, or if they are still negotiating with these guys. Once the player and the teams have both submitted their numbers, then the arbitrators are selected, which the players' union and the Major League Baseball Labor Relations Department, they get together and they select a panel of three arbitrators who are just anybody from the American Arbitration Association, just prominent professional arbitrators. They're not baseball people. They are basically judges. And they decide together on a three-person panel with one arbitrator serving as the panel chair. And then the hearings, they're all located in the same place. It varies from year to year. Basically, the union and the Labor Relations Department agree on a location. Preference is given to Los Angeles, Orlando, and Phoenix. basically warm weather places because it's the wintertime, warm weather, and a lot of baseball is focused on those areas anyway. And so then if you exchange numbers, you have your arbitrators picked, you know where they're at, and then the date comes, which they happen basically the first couple weeks in February. And so there's a few weeks between when the numbers are exchanged and when the hearings actually happen. So if you get to the point where you haven't reached an agreement yet and you're going to a hearing, then you show up and it's like going to court. The player will always or almost always be represented by his agent and or his attorney. And interestingly, teams usually will be represented by outside counsel too. And I'll talk a little bit more about why that is in a second when we talk about some of the potential for hurt feelings. And the hearing goes as follows. The player gets an hour to make their presentation. Then the club gets an hour to make their presentation. Then the player gets a half hour to, rebuttal against the, after the team's presentation. Then the club gets a half hour rebuttal to that. And then if requested, the player can sometimes have what they call a surrebuttal, meaning a rebuttal to the rebuttal, very brief, and responding only to new issues raised during the club's rebuttal. And then if the team requests it, they can have a very brief surrebuttal too, only addressing any new issues, and then it's done. So at most, there's three back and forths. I don't know how common the usage of the surrebuttals is. I would guess it's mostly just the two back and forths usually. But it's important to note, neither party has the burden of proof. In a trial, like a criminal trial, the prosecution has to prove that the defendant is guilty. In arbitration, neither party has the burden of proof. It's not a right or wrong thing. It's a you make your best case and then the arbitrators decide. And because it's not anything as important as, life and death or incarceration or anything, it's just, are you going to make millions of dollars or more millions of dollars? And so neither side has the burden of proof. The player and the club divide the costs of the hearing equally. So that's something that you factor in. Not that it's super expensive, but the hearings do cost money, and the players and the teams share those costs. So then you get into the actual hearing, and that's when the player makes his case saying, I think I should make this much money. And the criteria, I'll read this straight from the collective bargaining agreement because it's pretty interesting. So the criteria will be the quality of the player's contribution to his club during the past season, including but not limited to his overall performance, special qualities of leadership, and public appeal, the length and consistency of his career contribution, the record of the player's past compensation, comparative baseball salaries, the existence of any physical or mental defects on the part of the player, and the recent performance record of the club, including but not limited to its league standing and attendance as an indication of public acceptance. So that's the things that, you're saying, here's how good I am, here's how long I've been good, here's what I've been making, and here's what other comparable players have made. And that's probably the second time now that we're going to say precedent. That's why it's important for the players to do their best to make as much money as possible in the arbitration process, and for the teams to do their part, and not from a, I'm not taking sides here. I mean, I know there, anytime you talk about suppressing salaries, it gets into a question of, the billionaire owners versus the millionaire players, et cetera, et cetera. I'm sympathetic to all that, but I'm talking purely from a practical standpoint here, I guess. Members of the union have an obligation to the other members of the union to fight for as good a salary as possible. Members of ownership have a responsibility to the other owners to fight for as low a salary as possible because everything sets a precedent. For example, Chris Bryant, a couple years ago, set the record for the most money made by a player in his first year of arbitration, $10 million. That set the precedent. And then Cody Bellinger, who just had a season even better than Chris Bryant's had been. And, you know, it's been a couple of years, so inflation and everything. Cody Bellinger just set the record for most money made in a first year of our arbitration. That was the number he settled at with the Dodgers. Bellinger might have been able to make more. We don't know, but he also might have made less. Or, you know, maybe the Dodgers didn't want to face the backlash of going to a hearing with him. But, you know, usually both sides are motivated to get a deal done. And so those are the criteria you can basically, when you're making your case, you say, here's what I've done. And I thought it was interesting that it mentions the performance record of the club, including but not limited to its league standing and attendance. And so if you play for a last place team with worse attendance, you are going to make less in arbitration than playing for a good team that with high attendance, because, you know, good teams, you can make the case that you helped your team make more money. You helped your team win, and the attendance, you know, it says, look, the fans like us. So that was interesting to me. The things that you cannot use as evidence. Evidence of the following shall not be admissible. The financial position of the player and the club. That was interesting to me. You can't say, look, Dodgers, I know that you guys had a profit of $364 million last year, and so you can afford to pay me more. Irrelevant. The club can't say, look, you're already a millionaire. You don't need this much money. Doesn't matter. So you cannot use the financial position of the player or the club. Next thing that is not admissible, press comments, testimonials, or similar material bearing on the performance of either the player or the club, except that recognized annual player awards for playing excellence shall not be excluded. So basically, Bill Plaschke doesn't like you. Doesn't matter. The team can't use that. The only media attention that can be used is, did you win specific awards or get voted for in specific awards? Anything else is irrelevant and inadmissible. Also inadmissible, offers made by either player or club prior to arbitration. And so, you could picture a hypothetical scenario where a player says, I want $3.5 million. And the team says, no, we'll give you $3 million. And then later in the process, you know, as the off season goes on, they realize, oh, the market's going up. And so then the team comes back to the player and says, we'll offer you $3.5 million. And the guy says, nope, my price is now $4 million. Well, then they exchange numbers and go to hearing. The team can't say, look, he already said earlier this year that he'd be willing to take $3.5 million. That's inadmissible. The cost of the, you know, cost of their attorneys and representation is inadmissible and irrelevant. And salaries in other sports or occupation is irrelevant and inadmissible. What is admissible is salaries in baseball. And that is based on service time. Service time is so important. And, you know, I've seen a lot on Twitter people upset that the Dodgers gave Kike Hernandez $5.9 million, but they won't give Max Muncy $4.675 million, even though Muncy is clearly a better player than Kike Hernandez. The difference is Kike has more service time than Muncy, and so his precedent is higher, because the way this works is you make more money each year. And so Muncy is a first-year arbitration player, and so his comparables are other first-year arbitration players. Kike's comparables are second-year arbitration players, or maybe even third-year. You know, second-year, I think. No, it's third-year. So Kike has 5 years of service. Muncy only has 3 years of service. And so Kike is 2 years ahead of Muncy on this. So the fact that Kike is only getting, you know, $2 million more than what the Dodgers are offering Muncy kind of tells you everything you know about how much better Muncy is than Kike and how much more valued he is. And so that service time is a big deal, and that's something that I think a lot of people either don't understand or don't want to take into account as much as they should, that service time really, really matters in this situation. So everybody makes their case. The other thing, a really interesting point, one of our best listeners, Brandon Johnson, on Twitter, he sent me a DM asking about Max Muncy specifically and whether the position has any impact on the amount you make in arbitration, because Muncy is a first baseman and a second baseman. And so Brandon was wondering if that might be part of what the Dodgers will argue, that they are focusing on him as a first baseman rather than a second baseman. And the short answer is yeah, because players can use any publicly available statistics. They can't use StatCast data. They can't use wearable technology, performance technology, that kind of stuff. But any publicly available statistics, which means anything you can find on a website, basically, except for StatCast. Baseball Reference, great. Fangraphs, great. Even if it's a prescription, a subscription site like Baseball Prospectus, that counts. You can use all that. Well, all those sites have a version of WAR. WAR or WARP. BP calls it WARP. But in all of those cases, second basemen are more valuable than first basemen. WAR has what's called a positional adjustment, which means basically if two hitters hit exactly the same, they have the same exact offensive performance, and they have the same defensive value relative to their positions, a second baseman will have a WAR about 1.5 wins higher than a first baseman, because it's easier to find a guy who can hit 35 home runs and play a passable first base than to find a guy who can hit 35 home runs and play a passable second base. It's just, you know, body types, all that stuff. The physical characteristics that lead you to hitting 35 home runs often preclude you from being a good second baseman. And so there's that positional adjustment. So yeah, what position Max Muncy plays is a big deal in his arbitration case, because if he's a second baseman, he is, you know, roughly 1.5 wins more valuable. What does that mean? Well, on the open market, 1.5 wins is worth between $10 and $12 million. Obviously, in arbitration, it's not that much, but it definitely could close that gap of $675,000. And so it's interesting. I hadn't even thought of that until Brandon asked that question. But yeah, the position really can affect what's going on. So what is the case going to be like? Now, most of the time, obviously, it's not a pleasant experience, because the team is saying, here's why we don't think this guy is worth as much as he thinks he's worth. That's why teams usually have outside counsel do it, because, you know, they can then say, well, that, our attorney said that, you know, attorneys, we think you're great, but our attorney, you know, he had to do his job, blah, blah, blah. But it still has potential to cause hurt feelings. The two most notable examples, which we talked briefly about last week, you have Marcus Stroman two years ago, after his arbitration hearing, which he lost, he tweeted, including one tweet said, "The negative things that were said against me by my own team will never leave my mind." And then he backtracked a little bit the next day. He said, "It's an extremely tough process. I went through it last year. I went through it again this year. It's not a process that is enjoyable at all. I was frustrated. I tweeted pretty much what happens during the arbitration case, which is the other side doesn't say very nice things about you, and they bring up your entire career. It's tough. It's tough to sit in a room like that for 5 hours, be quiet, and listen to all the things that date back in to the time I was in the big leagues that worked against you. I was upset, and I think I have every right. I think if I wasn't upset, it would be even weirder." And so that really underscores the potential for damage that can happen here. Stroman, you know, he said, "There's no bad relationship there. It's something I was frustrated with. A lot of things they said, that was motivation, that was fuel to the fire that I pitched with last year. I understand it's a process. I understand it's going to blow over in the next couple of days." But a more notable example maybe was Dylan Betances the year before that in 2017. Betances lost his hearing with the Yankees, and afterwards he was pretty upset. The Yankees chose to focus on Betances' slow delivery to the plate, specifically that base runners were 21 for 21 in stolen base attempts against him. And and the Yankees team president, Randy Levine, was not very kind talking to the media. A tweet from Brian Hoke: Randy Levine said that Dylan Betances' $5 million request might as well have been $50 million. And a quote from Levine: he doesn't have the stats. And then another quote from Levine: $5 million goes to elite closers, pitchers who pitch the ninth inning and have a lot of saves. Dylan didn't have that record. He never did. It's like me saying, I'm not the president of the Yankees. I'm an astronaut. I'm not an astronaut, and Dylan Betances is not a closer. That's that sort of thing. When your team president is bad-mouthing the player to the media, that's where the potential for really bad blood can come in. So what does all this mean for the Dodgers? Hopefully, nobody on the Dodgers side of things would ever think of bad-mouthing Max Muncy that way. I'm focusing mostly on Muncy because I feel like Muncy's the one that that fans are most upset about, and it's maybe the most baffling. I still think they got to work something out with Muncy, but I also don't expect there to be many hard feelings because the Dodgers don't need to go in and say, we don't think Max Muncy's good. They can say, because Muncy, everyone agrees on Muncy's timeline. Muncy was bad, and then he has been good, very good, for the last 2 years. And so if the Dodgers say Muncy has only been good for 2 years, that's not an insult. It's not new news, and it's not anything that's going to hurt anybody's feelings because it's just the truth. It is a fact. And so they can point at precedents, say, guys who are in their first year of arbitration and have only had two good seasons make this much money. You know, and Muncy's team can say, I'm an outlier because I've hit 35 home runs 2 years in a row. I was very good defensively last year at multiple positions, et cetera, et cetera. There's cases to be made that don't have to hurt each other's feelings. And then at the end of the day, the panel of arbitrators picks one or the other, and then I think even if all these cases go to arbitration, I really don't see it lingering too much. Chuck Peterson is the one that I see the most chance for lingering resentment because, yeah, the Dodgers are going to point out Jock is a platoon player. Jock can't hit lefties. And Jock has bristled at that in the past. Maybe not as much lately. I think he understands more, but still, it's not going to be nice to hear your team saying that about you. But then Jock's side can come back and say, yeah, but even playing part-time, I hit 36 freaking homers, man. And so, you know, that will be interesting to see. I think at the end of the day, they all understand it's a business. And as long as nobody says anything really stupid, I don't think there will be any lingering effects. I don't think this is going to hurt the Dodgers' chances of signing Muncy to a long-term contract at some point. You know, Chris Taylor's an interesting one because he's been so up and down. Who knows what he's going to get, you know, but I feel like this is just business. It's really interesting that the Dodgers have four potential guys going to hearing after 13 years of no hearings, but, you know, it doesn't really say anything negative about either side. It's just one of those things that happens. And, at the end of the day, you know, we'll see in the next month or so if they do go to their hearings or if they settle or, you know, we'll know more. But the fact is they will all be on the Dodgers in 2020 unless they're traded because they are under contract. We just don't know how much that contract is. Literally, they go into the arbitration process with the contract all signed and just the salary number left blank, and the arbitrators fill in that number and done deal. So that's a little bit of a primer on the arbitration process. I hope it was useful for some of you. It really is interesting stuff if you're into that sort of boring stuff that you find it interesting like I do. If you have any specific questions, please shoot me a DM. I probably won't do another full episode on this, but I'll be happy to answer your questions in DMs if I can. And yeah, I think that will do it for today. Thank you for listening to Locked On Dodgers. Vince and I will be back together for tomorrow's episode. Maybe have some Dodgers news to talk about. Maybe not. We don't really know at this point, but we will be here. So please subscribe to Locked On Dodgers wherever you get your podcasts. If you have Apple Podcasts, even if you don't use it, please subscribe there to help other people find us. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Locked On Dodgers. Vince is on Twitter at Vince Semperio. I'm on Twitter at Snydog. Our email address is lockedondodgers@gmail.com. You can leave us a voicemail or shoot us a text anytime you want. The number is 323-863-LOCK. 5625. All of our social media, we all have DMs open on the group accounts and on our individual accounts. So shoot us a DM anytime you want. Yeah, we are here every weekday morning. We hope you will be here with us. When you get in your car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. And remember, you don't have to agree. You just have to listen. I'll talk to you later.
I say D-O, D-O-D-G-E-R-S. The team that's all heart, all heart and all thumbs, they're my Los Angeles, your Los Angeles, our Los Angeles. Do you think we'll really win the pennant? Bye!